micro radio poisoning the Jolly Roger, I think they called it, workshop discussion.
Micro broadcasting is better.
My name's V-Man. You can call me Vinny.
Rag.
I'm from Free Radio Santa Cruz. We operate at 96.3 FM, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We've been on the air since March of 1995. I'd actually like to start the discussion, because I just came from the last workshop that took place, and I want to talk a little bit about Ambana Kantako, who is the godfather of micro radio, the modern day micro radio movement. He is a blind African-American man who started what is now known as Human Rights Radio in Springfield, Illinois, in 1987. And from what I understand, he got his transmitter, it was 1 watt.
Are you familiar with this case, Will?
I think it was 1 watt, yeah.
And anyway, he was initially broadcasting to his building. He lived in a housing project, and it was called Tenants' Rights Radio. For a couple years, they broadcasted to the community, which was a largely African-American community, and he didn't really have any trouble with the Federal Communications Commission until he started reporting on police brutality in the community. And for me, he's a hero of mine. I've had the pleasure of interviewing him on my show a couple of times, and just to hear him speak is amazing. I just wanted to mention that. That's how this movement got started.
What was that guy's name again?
Ambana Kantako.
M-B-A-N-N-O-A-A-N-T-A-N-K-O.
Yeah, yeah, he's got a website. It's humanrightsradio.org, I think.
You can find him that way.
They just got a website. And so they'll probably have a lot more information. I'm just kind of going from what I know. But that's how this whole thing got started in, I guess, it was the National Lawyers Guild that tried to take his case, and he didn't really want to pursue it in the courts. He was just kind of like, fuck it. We're going to do what we're going to do. We got human rights, and we're going to go on the air regardless of what the laws are. And I take a lot of inspiration from that creed.
When was that? I'm sorry.
He started in 1987 initially, but he didn't really start having trouble until 1990, 91, I believe. But that's how the movement got started. Eventually, Stephen Dunifer went on the air in Berkeley, California in 1993 as a protest against the Gulf War and lack of reporting that was going on. And his case, eventually the FCC started to hassle him up in the hills of Berkeley, and they tried to put an injunction on him to stop broadcasting, and he decided to take it to court. And he got some favorable rulings, which spurned this whole thing, and it enabled folks like myself and people in other communities around this nation to go on the air. So I'll talk about Free Radio Santa Cruz, because that's what I'm most familiar with. We started in 1995, in March of that year, and our transmitter originally was at 89.3 FM. And the problem with that was, there was a station, a public station, KUSP, which was operating at 88.9, and in the immediate vicinity of our broadcast location, we were causing interference. And there was 12 complaints lodged against our station by KUSP's listeners. Within 2 months, Free Radio Santa Cruz got a visit.
Can I ask, you were at that time, you were broadcasting without a license?
Correct. We still are. And we got a visit from the FCC. They were asking about who owns the house and who owns the equipment. They were told to leave because they didn't have a search warrant, and they eventually left. The folks that were, I wasn't involved in the station at that time personally, but the folks that were running it decided to go off the air and move the physical location across town, got a new transmitter, and went on the air at 96.3 FM, which was a much cleaner space on the dial. There's nothing on either side to interfere with, and we have found a nice home there ever since, at least a nice home on the dial. We've had to move our station about 7 or 8, 9 times, I think, in the 7 years that we've been on the air.
You guys have a full schedule?
We do. Currently, we It's changed over the years. I mean, when I first got involved, I never thought that I would be here today talking to all of you. I never thought it would last more than 3 months. But over the years, it started with just kind of irreverent, a lot of punk rock music, and a lot of just irreverent people speaking their minds, cursing all the time, and kind of juvenile, immature broadcasting. And it's grown to a real community resource, and to the point where we get listener donations sent to us in the mail, and we're broadcasting online. I don't know where to take this, really.
I can ask you a question.
Sure.
Now, you say you've moved 8 or 9 or 7 times. Is that because they come and knock on the door and then you move? You know, can you go into, you know, I'm interested in, you know, how you stay a step ahead of the FCC, I guess. That's what you did.
With our station, it's kind of been more, we've had more problems with our collective process and actually running the station than we've ever had with the FCC. From my experience, the FCC, from my experience, is a paper tiger. They had hassled with us over the years, but they've never been able to get a search and seizure warrant, and they've never been able to get into our studio and actually inspect, because we have maintained a pretty militant attitude about it, that they're not coming in. What happens from my experience in interviewing other people that are engaged in this type of activity is that they often are intimidated by the FCC, and they let them into the studio, and they let them look at the equipment, and then they get threatened with $10,000 fine and threats of court, you know, dragging, you know, 2 or 3 years into court. And what happens is people just kind of let them take the equipment, and they go, okay, I give up.
Well, what about the inter-jurisdictional task force? You know, I heard about the guy in Tampa, right? I mean,
which guy in Tampa? There's like 7 micro-broadcasters in Tampa at one time.
I don't know if you get that's your name.
Brewer.
LD Brewing Group.
LD Brewing.
Yeah, it seemed like they didn't, you know, they had a little force behind them. Does that...
That's because that's how that particular section of the FCC, see, it's broken up in something like 10 or 11 sections, which I believe correspond to the numbers when you get a ham radio license, you know, like 2 is in the New York area.
Oh, okay.
They have districts, and that particular district at one time, a very short time ago, was extremely aggressive, but after a while, a change occurred when they started raiding, for instance, the college stations, like there was a free radio Gainesville. When they came, they had a complete reversal, an utterly toothless lead raid with deliberately false and notwithstanding charges just to scare them, made up rules that they won't even enforce instead of real ones, and they left the transmitter antenna sitting right there, and there were no fines. That's called a toothless raid. Mm-hmm. You see, the FCC has to decide whether it's going to have an old-fashioned, you know, an old-fashioned, I guess you say, Russian-style, bureaucracy-style, you know, many, many people, armies and lawyers and raids and headlines, which they can no longer do because the FCC is a public agency, and their image looks very bad. Like in one case, we had a children's instructional pirate radio station. The FCC was notified, and they threw away the papers.
They're not about to come and arrest a bunch of 12-year-olds.
Anybody who looks good in the papers, and it's very easy finding friends. You're like Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz. You find friends very easily. And you have a defense. You know, if you're Muslim hip-hop, look out. But if you're a pirate, you know, always put on your best face and, you know, ham it up when you're orange. But they know in advance you're clear.
So did that change come with Powell or something? I mean, because the last I heard, they were stepping up force.
Well, they always say that they're stepping up.
Okay.
I mean, they're never going to say, well, we're backing off and we're going to let a lot of pirates go on the air now.
Well, right, but, yeah, I mean,
whether it sounds
like whether they're
still the radio in New York City, or shut down.
STI was a highly visible political station. In fact, it was an unusual kind of a station. It wasn't like a station that just creates. They actually had 150 DJs all coming into one association. It's like the opposite of like a bedroom station.
And did, well, didn't they get the...
It was very busy.
Didn't the old SEC guy come out of retirement? What's his name? Judah came out of retirement to bust them because they were a high-profile state. And he's supposed to be the SEC agent that busted the pirates that were on the ship on international waters in the 80s outside of New York. And he, like, came out of retirement because Silas Radio was such a high-publicity thing to get headlines. Mm-hmm. And that's why they got busted, is what I heard.
Yeah, it has very little to do with our Arbitrons usually. It used an assortment of AC power transmitters, something like 25 watts. Usually a good signal for Lower Manhattan. But the thing is, they were always in the Village Voice, they were on television, Manhattan Cable, things like that, and they sued the SEC. I mean, how do you want to be more noticed than if you sue the SEC and tell them where you are?
So this is PK, and we'll introduce ourselves.
Professor Alexander Kleistron, it means I teach radio.
And I'm DJ Dizzy from 313.9 in New York.
And I'm the Red Orchestra clandestine to serve you better.
Well, DJ Dizzy, do you have a program in New York?
We have a station. These are some of our transmitters. We have several transmitters and lots of antennas set up at many different locations. The transmitters travel among the antennas. And we also have some mobile antennas, transmitters go to mobile places. So we set up at many different. Every week we're at two or three different locations around the city.
And I do. The Red Orchestra is also known as the Free Pirate Broadcast School. We create hopefully the smallest, the bedroom kitchen stations, the children's instructional stations. And we specialize in wireless studio, which is CB radios carrying audio, and being able to bring portable stations anywhere. And quality of stations, not just stations, but other qualities, is the key to us in making sure that people can duplicate them very easily. Let me just make a quick political point. The best thing we can do for anybody, including the radio industry, for Bandu Kanto, right?
And
Kentaco, right, sorry,
sir.
And the like, is to create as many almost unknown stations as possible so that they don't come up as like pinpoints, but more as like an ache across the land. It's just an impossible lawsuit for anybody to fight.
1,000 points of light, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's over the years...
1,000 points of flow.
The micro-broadcasting...
They would consider it terminal cancer.
The micro-broadcasting and low-power movements have taken like innumerable different tacts. There's all these legal challenges. There are, you know, we're from the civil disobedience camp, and we're all taking many different tactics too. Like there's a 24/7 station there on the internet. We have some thing on the internet, but we're trying to be many locations. Give the different people in our area the equipment. Let them do what they want. You know, they curate the programming when they have the equipment, and we're also much more interested in sort of. Sound art and kind of expanding the uses of radio instead of just like playing a song and then there being some silence with someone dryly reading, well, you just heard, and then playing another song.
I believe that political goals are like Brooke Shields' matching luggage. You try to get as rid of as many pieces as possible. But the thing that makes pirate radio and freedom of speech go down the road is making it work for everybody.
So you guys move your transmitter, you say. And so you move that to avoid the FCC, and is it valid to be afraid of them? That's what...
I don't think we move it necessarily just to avoid. I mean, a lot of stages are set up in collective situations like... V-Man's that we're, you know, it's a large collective. They have one central location. Everyone comes to that studio. Our situation is do the studio out of your house, take the equipment, borrow it, and invite your friends over, and you curate your collective, and we're all part of the, so there's many different collectives, all part of the same giant web, sharing the same equipment. But so I think our moving around is just as much in that a lot of different voices can be heard as much as a cat and mouse situation.
Sure. I guess what I'm trying to assess, if you can't tell, is, you know, how dangerous is it? You know,
we've done what we do for 5.5 years, and we've never gotten a call, a letter, a visit, any sort of contact. You've done it for 7 years, and
Yeah, I mean, this is the, to the extent of, to answer your question, this is the most we've ever received from them, is a four letter of that, where, I mean, you can see they don't even have the money to buy new letterhead, so. This, in fact, is the Issus Klingel Health. And it's funny because it's checked, if you'll notice, it says here, you refuse to allow an inspection of your radio equipment in violation of Section 303 of the Communications Act, as amended. Then the next one that's checked says, a valid FCC radio station license for your transmissions on 96.3 megahertz was not in evidence at the time of inspection. Well, that's an oxymoron. The first thing they checked was that we refused to allow them to inspect. So how could there be a valid license when they inspected, when they didn't even get in? I mean, that's how the FCC operates. And in my opinion also, if I could just finish this thought, is that there are individuals in the FCC who are sympathetic to what we're doing, and they are, you know, they understand that this is a free speech issue, that there isn't really access to the airwaves for people, low income, underprivileged communities, what have you.
And they also know that more stations can fit on the dial.
Yeah.
Exactly. Then their regulations are the same.
Another thing.
No, I had on the other side, opposite flip side of this whole thing. When I was down in South Florida, in Palm Beach County, I used to listen to WMNF. I had a big, huge antenna. I could barely pick them up coming across the state from Tampa. And a pirate went on the dial on 88.5, broadcasting on Hispanic and Asian music, no ID, and it was a pirate. And I complained. I said, I'm glad the station's here. Why does it have to be on 88.5? And they gave me a big run around and basically said, we're not enforcing any of this stuff.
The feds, the FCC.
Yeah. Let me tell you, I could never do what you did in a million years. Care about content that is not pirate. You know, pirate means to go against another person or power's rules of radio. It is just plain.
I don't know if I used the word pirate. All I'm saying is I was complaining about an unlicensed
station
interfering with what I was trying to listen to.
As you have no right to do that. That's what it will. Finally, there is no possible argument that I can ever entertain that even scrapes the idea that you have a right to do that. Let me tell you about. Let me tell you about getting found too. In some cases where you have a decent, robust 30, 40 watts, you don't disseminate the right information. You might give a little false information about who you are and where you are. Use a little mobility, a little cunning, right? You have about as much chance of being found by the FCC as you would leaving your binoculars in Coney Island and finding them a year later.
Wow, those are pretty good thoughts.
Yeah. That's why I can feel safe when we do a classroom, when we do some instructions, when we like to drive a station to a truck stop and start an argument about Monica Lewinsky and broadcast it for a couple days, you know.
Wasn't there a movement within the FCC to legitimize micro radio? And
well, part of all our efforts and a whole bunch of other people, we've been lobbying and for this low power FM for years, and they've 2 years ago, they finally passed this very weak, watered-down proposal that allows for a few low-power stations in rural communities, which is great, but none in big cities. None, very few could fit on the dial. They didn't allow like a half of what could fit on the dial. It's like 10%.
Basically, it was a charade.
Well, what happened was in 1978, under pressure from NPR, the FCC did away with what was called then Class D FM, which was under 1 to 10 watts.
They used to be allowed the small stations to exist legally.
And
NPR and the Christian stations lobbied against this in 78, and since then you can't apply for a station that's small.
It's not about arbitrage, and it's very little about interference. What it's about is the actual laws and the implications behind it, that stations cannot have this clear channel, and that the FCC is not the mighty who turns people off and turns people on. It's a matter of power and image and how they justify themselves, because they're essentially the emperor's new clothes. Let me tell you right now, first of all, there is no reason why the FCC should ever charge a station for a license, okay? Because that is the job of the Internal Revenue Service, when they've actually done money. If you didn't make any money, you shouldn't see any charges at all. Second of all, broadcast
broadcast has nothing to do but just to the public. It has not about navigating planes. It's not about special cell phones and charges and things like that. It's broadcast. It's one of the most basic forms that needs a radio. What we should actually do is disband all licenses, you know, all licenses, whatever. That would be the first step. Maybe they won't do it. But if not, you ask for a license, you should get it. There shouldn't be any interference questions. There shouldn't be any charges. If they want to check yours, if they want to inspect your station, it should be like your car got pulled over on the highway. Are all your lights working? Thank you. Have a nice day, sir. Use your seatbelt.
I would say two things. One, if there was no regulation of the airwave, you would be crushed by people that broadcast 200,000 watts.
Well, they're correct.
There's been times in Italy in the 70s there were no licenses, and they didn't have problems like that.
Would it come down to just who had the most money for the biggest transmitter?
Biggest transmitter.
No, another thing is you've got to realize the people with $200,000 stations also have rights, identical rights to ours. It's not that is killing us. It's the special equivalents of patents. You know, of these special licenses and the things that made Disney higher than us. And Disney actually has no more or less rights than us. And another thing is, please don't talk about consolidation. It's actually a problem that we have with our laws. It's within our laws itself. Because, I mean, I've been guilty of running, like, chains of radio stations at the same time, you know. And, you know, I've had monopolies too, you know. It's really within our laws because the laws not only let them consolidate, but they make them exclusive and shut other things out. That's why consolidation is bad. Consolidation of your programming.
I think that there's a wide variety of opinion on this whole thing about why we're doing this and you know, what the end result. You know, some of us want some sort of regulation, but it's completely ridiculous that no one, you can't apply for a low power license. It's completely ridiculous that Americans have no access at all, and virtually no access in many areas of the country to the airwaves, which are just like parkland. I mean, it's the same thing. So there's a variety of opinions over if the FCC should be destroyed or eliminated or changed in some way.
I suggest a dumpster with one of those, you know, one of those foot pedals that slams to shut the aromas when you're done.
If let's say you end up in one of these zones where they're aggressive, and they do, you know, find you or, you know, whatever, what can you expect? You know, what do you guys know what's happened? You know, has there been any actual, you know, lawsuits in the last 5 years, you know, that you could talk about?
Well, certainly the number of stations being busted is way down from 1998. 97, 98, I think, was the high point of busting stations.
Yeah, but those numbers are inflated, too. It's not like they actually went in and seized everything. It's what usually happens, like I said, they come, they knock, and people get scared, and they turn off their transmitter because they're afraid it's going to get confiscated.
Okay, and if they don't do that, what happens?
That's called a paper.
They have to go to a federal judge to get a seizure order. And it depends. It's like where I live in Northern California, the federal judges there are not going to do it because it's a First Amendment thing, and they probably are sympathetic. Somewhere else, you know, like in Florida,
they're more likely to do it. And then people have got.
They do one of the penalties.
Did you hear about radio bring that?
Yes, I
took away their transmitters.
Well, I understand the, the microprocessor and the pilot trainer is a philosophy. You have to believe in that philosophy and you have to go for it. It's not a question of faith or authorities knocking on your door. It's a philosophy. You adopt to that philosophy. And what we really would like to know about how do you deal with, like, just stepping or passing on that point. There are a few books and lots of articles on the pirate radios and how they go that direction. But I'd like to know how much equipment you need, how do you deal with programming, or watch people, how do you broadcast for 24 hours, and also how do you finance? You mentioned that if you don't sell, and the revenue.
No, just the opposite. Just the opposite. Let me try to. I think you gave me too many questions at one time.
I know. We just want to move on because the one.
No, I'm going to move back. I'm going to round back and answer all your questions as I can possibly remember them.
Okay.
When it comes to financing, I just buy them. Do you ever buy a TV set? You know? If you can buy a TV set, you can buy a transmitter. The Veronica with the compressor built in is $400, and then all my other doodads. So just add them in, you got a station. As for, let me think of what's the next one.
There's, I mean, you can make transmitters out. There's a transmitter in your VCR, and you can. There's a plans on the web somewhere that they can boost that, build, you know, do it yourself with very little parts and make that boost that transmitter. We use this equipment here, which is this size. If I had an antenna hooked up, we could be broadcasting right now in this room.
So it's
this
little.
This is 40 watts, I think.
No, you're that's this 4 watts.
That one's 4 watts.
That's a Dunifer and.
Yeah,
Dunifers fail a lot.
This one is strong.
One of the first sets that ever came, because people ask a lot about Stephen Dunifer. He was the very first person who really got out a solid-state retunable radio that had an almost correct signal on the air. And he brought it up to a next level. Then from him, a gentleman called L. Doug Brewer in Tampa, Florida, started producing bricks. He started gathering up any possible kit he could. He did some research and analysis to his specs. He built an extruded enclosure, right? And he done it basically using other people's exciters, which were starting to appear. He built a radio with his own finals, like typically 40 watts AM or stereo. You order it, right? It was all enclosed. You open it to change frequencies and stuff. The novelty about it was when the FCC showed, you could disconnect the power cord and two wires and run out the door with it. It was grab the Brewer brick under your arm and run, and it was a much higher quality set than anybody had ever built. It gets a little hot, but it's definitely like a collector's item. These fail a lot, the Dunifers, and they're also obsolete, and they're missing channels, and they're expensive. You got to wait for them. You know, it's actually today, I hate to say the word, they were a nightmare. There are other companies like WaveMac in Toronto and
Broadcast Warehouse in London.
Well, they're not as good. Circuit-wise, they're good, but they don't repair very easily. Broadcast Warehouse. But Veronica is the first one to like standardize the boards, give you the enclosure kit or belt. I mean, they are. But the Dave Schindel WaveMac in Toronto doesn't have the nice layout, but it's a very simple set. But I mean. That's also a very good set.
Or could somebody get a list of what's available?
You got
websites. Yeah, there's a lot of websites that have links to all of it.
Yeah.
Don't get a publication set.
Oh yeah. Don't get a Max 1, Max 2, Max 5, or whatever they are.
Let's come back to your question about programming, because that's kind of my area of expertise. This equipment stuff. A lot of it, we have a techie that deals with it in Santa Cruz. I don't deal with it, frankly. We are 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And we are a collective, theoretically we're a collectively run organization, which means that everybody has equal decision-making power. We meet bi-weekly, we come together, and each time we have a meeting, it's kind of like whoever shows up in the room, that's the collective, those are the people that make the decisions. But for the most part, our decisions are made on a day-to-day basis when things happen, and that usually falls on about four or five people who do the nuts and bolts of keeping things on the air, making sure that the programming runs on time. We have a schedule, and like I said, when we first started out, it was just kind of chaotic. We didn't really like have too much structure. People were, they would call up their friend and say, hey, I'm going to leave town. Why don't you do my show this week? And then their friend would come in and had no idea how to use any of the studio equipment and would just over-modulate it and just be silly, get drunk, and the next person would come to do their scheduled show, and they would be told, well, I'm doing the show by some drunk person who's not even part of our collective. So we eventually realized that this was not going to work. Our collective was just not happening, and so we had to implement some guidelines, which is part of that. We got to hand it out.
Most pirates started trying not to have any kind of rules at all. They find that they're kind of necessary.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, a lot of people think it's anarchic, or however you want to say it. It's not. I mean...
It's also good radio. Like, you have to present good programming and good
you have to have tied commercials.
Yeah. No, we don't have commercials. We don't have commercials at all.
But how do you handle these people, volunteers and...
Give away cars, give away the camera, you could.
Wait, what is your fundraising? How do you do fundraising?
Okay, so initially we were lucky in the beginning, in the first 2 or 3 years, where we were able to get space to broadcast from for free. After a while, though, we had a lot of landlord problems, tenant problems. That's been our main struggle in Santa Cruz, has been keeping a roof over our heads. And more than this crap with the FCC, I mean, it's like infighting, personal differences of opinion. Because you got a diverse group of people, you know, they're all coming from a different perspective. And that's the most challenging aspect, in my opinion, is working in a collective and trying to have all voices heard, yet, you know, have some structure there. So what we do now, we have to pay rent where we are currently, $360 a month. We have a DSL bill, and we have some other various expenses. We have about $500 per month operating expenses, and we've had to implement dues. And so everybody that has a show is required to pay $20 a month. And that's the only way we're able to keep it going. And if people fall behind, we're real lenient. You know, we have tons of rules, and then nobody wants to enforce it. So we let people kind of slide for 3 or 4 months, and then it's like, if you get way behind, you're going to lose your show. And that's the way we've had to work. We have fundraisers, but we have T-shirts that we're selling currently, if anybody's interested. They're $15, organic cotton. Thank you. We have two designs, in fact. He's got a few more.
Yeah, can this car runs the front around the station? How does it sound? By the volunteers do?
Yeah, people that do shows, usually every 3 hours, they do. We have... I have schedules here, I think, somewhere.
Our station, we... the program is, like, completely up to whoever's has the transmitter at that point. The fundraising, we have a space and we have a lot of shows there that we put on the air, so we make some money that, and we sell some CDs and some things too. And then earlier there was a question about what you do if you get what happens if they do find you. Like in our case, if we ever got contacted, we would just never broadcast again from that location, because the FCC ties everything to the location, and they'll give you, they always, 100% of the time, they give you a warning the first time. So if they come and give us a warning at a location, we don't let them in, and we just never broadcast from again. And then the next, if they found it somewhere else, they starting from zero, have to give us a warning, and then we just do it from somewhere else.
I use a different kind of station. Instead of having a transmitter where everybody comes to perform, you have a frequency. On the rare occasions when we have ganged up, what we do is we set all our transmitters to say 99.9 or something, anywhere on the band, top, bottom, anywhere that we hope is clear. And what we do is the transmitters turn off, they turn on, and there are not too many visitors right directly at the station. What we use is a whole new system called the Wireless Studio, which is audio carried by a modified CB with broadcast transcription audio. You can use its microphone and its audio circuit turned on, or you can use the airwaves of the CB simultaneously. So the CB radio becomes the tube, the avenue that all the audio programming is coming over, and the audio comes through the airwaves into the station, that you don't even have to be there with the timer. And there is also audience participation if you happen to own a CB radio. It also opens up that we can simulcast. You can put more transmitters on, all sniff them all out on the CB with their receivers. They all play the same program in different parts, areas, if you want, with different frequencies or out of range of each other. And there is another advantage to this is you don't have people in your fridge, you don't have people scaring your cat, and you don't have people lifting the lid on your toilet. So, you know, the visitors to the station are coming in through the CB antenna, the second antenna on our roof.
How much does it cost for this CB radio?
Okay. I like 30 watts, 5 plus 30 watts, Veronica, right? I would say with a few extra doodads, an extra wireless studio, that's an extra CB and some extra timers, about $800.
There's other people that have similar setups, like in Arizona, New Mexico, there was a station that had like a solar power unit up on a mountain that they beamed their signal from wherever their studio was up to the transmitter and the antenna up on the mountain. And I think the FCC eventually came and got the transmitter off the mountain, but they can't find anybody if you just replace the equipment.
Yeah, we have a question over there.
Go ahead and finish.
It's good if you can separate your main transmitter, which is a sizable chunk. In the case of Radio Mutiny in Philadelphia, their transmitter, I don't know what it was, it was like 20 or 40 watts. Oh. It was several hundred dollars worth of investment itself, right? But the all the audio components, it was what you call an empirical station, like a mirror of a real normal radio station, totally live, tied to the AC lines and stuff. It was all CD machines, tape, discs, mixers, everything. It had thousands of dollars worth of audio equipment. And when the FCC came to that station, which they were really, really pissed at, not because of their air presence, but because of their political stances and stuff, they, in publicity, and they were a real thorn in their side. What they did was the transmitter they made off with was insignificant, but they also stole all the audio equipment. They sacked all the audio equipment from Radio Mutiny, and that equivalent was equivalent of like several thousand dollars. It had been donated by an engineer.
Who's this?
Out of his pocket.
Till the end.
You have a program schedule here, so you can kind of know what to expect, in, or at least in substance, of what's going to happen in the week. I don't know anything about you except that the transmitter keeps changing hands. Is there some sort of... what gets produced each week? Does the content change radically then, constantly, depending on whose hands? Yeah.
Yes, and depending on whose hands.
Do you find that there are any consistencies in what people produce? Like, is it always conversation? Is it always music?
It's not always anything. It is up to the host. Like I said before, like if there was one overriding theme of the station, a lot of sound art people are involved, so they're interested in sort of exploring what radio can do that's not being done on traditional stations. People have done radio plays, people have like hosted panels, people have hosted events, like any sort of kind of thing that you can imagine being on the radio is
children's shows, because even blocks of one after another, children's shows, cooking shows, things like that. Anything you can scratch your itch on. And as long as people have to, it's performance. The correct word is performance. Music's what you get lost on. Everybody wants to do music except a few of us. But every kind of a gamut of a show that you could ever imagine, that going even beyond the best broadcast stations like WBAI.
You mentioned that the truck stop conversation with Monica Lewinsky. That sounds great to me.
Yes.
And I like the sound that it's utterly impulsive, right? You just talk with who's there, is that right?
You just get them a little hot under the collar. But the thing is, I break rules. As I like to put CB on FM illegal. That helps me to be a better pirate. But I also like to do Office Depot commercials, and I like to give away Camrys and SUVs on the air and things like that. And I put dating services on, and all you do is call back on the CB. And if somebody wants a blonde, it costs more. But if he wants a girl who likes trucks, I have 33,000 girls on database. None of them likes trucks. You take your programming, just extend, have some fun with it, and break even the rules that the pirates are saying. Pirates can be the most restrictive of all in some cases.
Just one last question, which is, let's say you get somebody who wants to do kids shows ad nauseum, and how long are they going to have the transmitter for? And do we have any say?
Well, the way they do it is they decide. The way I do it is the frequency is the station, not the transmitter. What I do is I send somebody up with their own transmitter, with their own facilities and their own knowledge to keep duplicating, and I launch them like a boat. And they can do the shows forever and ever, because all I'm doing is the freedom of speech side, and some people call it empowerment, I call it duplication, right? It's just empower them to do their own, and no control comes with it whatsoever. I don't do a thing. The only real crime you can do with a radio, you can commit fraud with a radio, and if you actually increase the power to some super, super, super high power, like somebody was next to an apartment, was next to this shortwave station with, 500,000 watts to breach the Atlantic, but the whole thing was like his apartment was on top of the antenna's tuning coil or something, you would eventually heat him up so much until it actually became harmful by making him hot, and he'd have to turn on his air conditioner or go out, The radio does no physical harm in almost every case except when I touch the tuning coil, you know. But the only other thing you can do is falsehoods, interfere with emergencies, or, you know, or actual fraud on the radio. That's the only crimes you can do with radio.
Are there any women crimes?
Billions.
More girls than guys. It's not here today for some reason.
More girls than guys.
Is that right?
Yeah, in fact, you can take the machismo of building things, right? And you can take it and roll it up, and you can toss it in the can. You know? Because girls make the best pirates, and I gotta tell you, I'd rather listen to a girl at night than a guy anyhow.
I can understand.
Somebody knows
regulations in Europe, is that what you're saying? There's lots of stations in Amsterdam has like six different collectives that have stations, I think, and England is
the world's leader. England is the world's leader in terms of talented building. And offshore is basically like an obsolete almost concept. It's, you know, it's kind of obvious, but they have mostly FM. They have extensively more shortwave than we do. They don't have kits for shortwave. They have mostly ham sets and converteds and things. But Europe is like the capital of pirates.
Every squad, and if you find a squad in Europe, they have a radio station, almost assuredly.
But what America specializes in gluttony. The English should say that, you know, when we buy a set, we don't buy a set, we buy two sets. You know, we got a set in the kitchen and a set in the bedroom, and either a set in the kitchen or a set in the car, or, you know, or the back patio. We're the gluttons. We're like TV. You know, TV's everywhere. And we do pirate. Some of us give orders, you know, that you have, you know, a couple stations in the house. You know, put this one away and go get that one to go for the picnic, you know. The Europeans are definitely, their laws are not all that different from us. I think there are a few countries trying to get along with it, but they're basically as hostile, as phony as the FCC. It's true in Canada, too, if not worse. But the difference is that the European pirates have a distinct memory of the old swastika, and they tend to be the most politically rebellious and expressive of all the pirates.
Can I ask you about the 30 watts and how far, if you have the right antenna, the height, everything is right, how far it could go?
Okay.
This is 1 second. If you're giving CT radius for more than one minute, how do you keep the flow if, like, you're going to shut one person off?
With the timer.
How could you keep the flow of the radio going without interruption?
Okay, the CDs only carry the audio. You could also listen to them. They make beautiful sets. Dr. Zeus. People used to sell CB radios, that is, they used to put programs on. But basically, when you connect it to FM, and we're only going to talk about FM for a minute, because all your different bands that you can transmit have radically different power propagation. 30 watts is good for, in the country, about 12 miles. You go into an extreme city with no FM frequencies, hardly left, that are actually physically clear, right? Where you might have three faraway distant stations in Jersey or something, they will go maybe 2 miles, but it still gives you the same arbitrons, because you got the city. The more miserable the neighborhood, the better the radio, just like the certain indoor hobbies, you know? So you might arbitron about 5,000 listeners with a good program, whereas if you played like a Howard Stern thing, you'd have an arbitron of probably none. Whatsoever.
Mostly it's about how high your antenna is. Like, you have a 40-foot high mast.
And your pattern, you know, how many feeds you have on. If you really want to get technical, we'll have one of those really high-up special antennas, you know, like a commercial station has. But generally, like a single-point antenna working well. You want your cable on FM, for instance, being 100 megahertz. You want your cable to be efficient enough to give you height, but not to rob all the power as it reaches it. Because if you put your antenna on a 10-story building and you just put an average cable on it, it's all petered out. You might as well put it on your roof of your car. You know, if you ran something real special, like cell reach cable, the signal would go boom, right up to the top, and boom, it would knock radios off the table.
You had a question, Lyle?
I had a question before. It was brother from Red Orchestra keeps saying these guys get hassled or being political. Well, what's the point? If you're not political, what's the point?
No, the point is that we, not for us to go out and tell them what to do or right or wrong, because they cannot be wrong. They're obvious, but they're not wrong. The point is the flip side. It's for us to help them, okay? We help them by being successful. And any time we figure out how to keep, well, most stations are closed down by the wives. So, you know, you have too many visitors, not by the FCC. And bosses give you notes that you're coming in too late. You know, that's what really closes stations down, that people who build sets with always smoke, got smoking transistors and stuff. But what the point is Mbanto Kantanka would only have a local problem, not a not on top of it, an FCC problem. If everywhere you went, the common world, the whole world, even Disney, was saying that there are so many pirate radio stations and that it's just wrong to do it. Let me make another point. When you put pirate radio stations on the air, when they come into a community, when they come into being, right, you create talent ready for commercial radio stations. You change the expectations of the actual radio stations and what they're being asked for, and you change the expectations of the listener, all, whether you like it or not, to the benefit of those commercial radio stations. You cannot. They've been saying the opposite of it. You can never, ever turn it around. Is that pirate radio stations just happen to help in a tremendous, profound way to improve the whole industry, including the commercial.
If I can bring up a point of what happened in Tampa, is once the raid had actually occurred and three stations were shut down, a Clear Channel station went on the air broadcasting 24/7 under the guise that they were a pirate radio station, because they were trying to get the Generation X model that was achieved and suddenly was seen as the desirable marketplace, which, because most of the people in programming were a decade or a generation removed from what's actually going on current. So I think that the next thing for a pirate station is, how do you avoid your image being co-opted and being taken away from you, and suddenly this sort of kid listening to what you use to pirate radio is actually commercial radio. And as he was saying, the pirates inadvertently help out the station by letting you know.
Well, what you have there is nature imitating art, and it's a rare example. But it also, at the same time, it tells you that they got a march to the drum of that now there's a new kid in town, and this new kid is doing everything that he should be. He's a bad little boy, and you gotta do it his way.
At that time, there was like three Latin stations, one punk rock, one like the party pirates like rock music, and then like a libertarian stage. There were seven on the air at this time, and they came in with police and guns and stuff and raided three of them on like November 19th, 97. So at this point in Tampa, like, pirate radio was a huge deal in all the papers and all the TV, and that's why it was really co-opable like that.
One more regulation that I wasn't sure about. You can't officially, by law, broadcast music over CB. Is that something that is paid attention to at all?
Well, what it does is it helps you to be a better pirate, for one thing. If I hear Channel 9, I won't touch 9. I happen to respect, personally, the emergency facility. If you observe something like that, or you observe a business using a cab, there's absolutely no law or obligation, but I will not interfere with the business. I'll just go find another channel. You know, I won't interfere with the channel that they created, you know, sometime later as emergency. I steer a well couple of channels clear of that. I stay away from, but if you you can answer that by listening to the CB and listen to the ego test, to the skip jumpers, to the gangs, or not all bad, right? And just to understand, you get the same rights as they do. But remember that the FCC created all these rules at a particular time in a McCarthy era, and actually they read of McCarthy control, you know? And so, I mean, the best thing you can do is do what about 90% of the CBers are doing, which make a total joke of their laws, because you're just joining the party, making it better, you know?
CB has a pretty narrow frequency response. That's good. It's designed for voice, 300 to 3,000, and doesn't get pretty lousy quality putting music over that.
It's controlled to that. You turn it to broadcast transcription audio. You modify the set. Sit down and modify the compressor, the receive and transmit audio paths. And then what you also do, forget about peaking it. Forget about extra frequencies. Only get you caught off band. But what you do is, it's got the audio equivalent of a music cassette, a compact cassette. And that's that in your programming content. I'll take a standard CB over Howard Stern. I'll take anything on CB. I'll take the guy doing, you know, the religious broadcasts with a rubber band on his mic over Howard Stern. So you're ahead of the game before you ever turn it on.
How much of your programming is political? Can you give us some idea? Like, you're 24/7, so a lot of your shows music, a lot of your shows what?
We've got a lot of the nationally syndicated programming. So we have like Democracy Now, Making Contact, Counterspin, Alternative Radio, Between the Lines, Free Speech Radio News every day.
And that stuff's not available on public stations in Santa Cruz?
No. That's why we exist. We have a college station there with 10,000 watts. We have KUSP, which is the NPR affiliate. And that's what they are. They're NPR. I would say it's about 50-50 music and politics. Maybe even, depending on who is running, you know, who is setting up, because a lot of the stuff is automated. So depending on, if it's me, I tend to be more into the talk, the political talk shows. So depending on who's there.
You would say before you take phone calls too, right?
Oh yeah, yeah, bye. We have a...
How do you pick up the Pacifica stuff?
Off the internet.
Oh.
DemocracyNow.org. They have MP3.
They have MP3.
Yeah. Wouldn't you be
delayed because if you download the MP3, they only put it on at 4 o'clock.
Right, we're on the West Coast, so...
Oh, okay.
We play Democracy Now! At 1 p.m.
Oh, okay.
It's already 4 in the afternoon.
Yeah.
East Coast.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
And then Free Speech Radio News comes on the station at 5 p.m. every day.
That's good, thanks.
How big a city is Santa Cruz?
Roughly 55,000 people. The population of... Or with a homeless population of 3,000 to 5,000.
Goodness.
I want to change the subject for a moment because it's just something we can't forget. I think it's important that we give out, if we have any helpful websites and emails for people to start stations and what the premises are of what we do. I do wireless studio and I like to make stations successful and suitable to their recipients. No website, redorchestra@hotmail.com. Or radioliteracy@yahoo.com, Professor Alexander Kleistrom. Free advice, and I bill at cost. Okay, very important. I like Dave Schindel, that's WaveMac. He's in Toronto. I don't have his email, but you can find his website. He's got a website, I can't remember it. And very, very much like Veronica, www.veronica.co, that's co.uk, www.veronica.co.uk.
Freeradio.org has a lot of links to a lot of these places. And then I'll give my I'm at free103.9@yahoo.com, and that's FREE103POINT9. And we're also at screwmusicforever.com. You can find a link to 313 website.
Free Radio Santa Cruz, we're linked up through microradio.net/FRSC. You can listen to us 24 hours a day on your computer, 64 kilobit stream, 24 kilobit stream, and real audio. We have various files up there on our site. You can order t-shirts if you weren't interested in buying one today. You can get them from me. I have a couple left, but you can get them online. We have PayPal. You can donate to us. There's extensive links. We link to Veronica. We have all kinds of links on our site, political, pirate radio links, other stations. It's a good site.
I like to get, if you want to pay anybody, I also like to get people to pay themselves because I encourage people to have their own radio stations. And instead of incredible amounts of associations to to do them, to run single stations, for everybody to cooperate with all their different stations to create some programming. Everybody owns their own bedroom station or their own. And one other thing is, I'm very much, the word is out, educational, especially children's educational pirate radio is here. It's already here, and privacy is a very important thing. It has nothing to do with politics. It's about teaching children radio and radio skills, and the classroom belongs to the children. It's the business of the principal and the administration that makes it work, the teachers, the parents, the children, and nobody else.
And we were both held as a successful children's program in East Harlem.
Kids Discover Radio was a very successful, very forward station, and it had a completely different nature to it from a broadcast station. And the children, the actual training of equipment occurred in about 2 weeks, and those children, they looked like the submarine crew during a crash dive, and they loved it. This is a school
project.
We shouldn't get too specific about our federally funded pirate radio station.
Yes.
Okay? No names here, okay?
Right. I'd like to end by just saying, for me personally, the reason that I'm involved in radio broadcasting is because it's a broader issue of social change, and I see it as a vehicle to reach people that I would otherwise be unable to communicate with and impart my own ideas about how the world should be. So I think that sums it up for me.
I think the feds are on their way now.
Yeah.